This podcast covers the unit on the events leading to the Civil War. The antebellum period in American history is the period leading up to the Civil War. It was characterized by sectionalism and conflict. In the North, the economy had undergone a shift from an agricultural-based economy to one of industrialization, which embraced advances made during the Industrial Revolution. The North also experienced advances in transportation. Canals were dug, roads were built, and miles of tracks were laid down to carry railroads. By 1860, there were over 31,000 miles of tracks linking people, places, and goods throughout the North and connecting them to the West. Technology such as the telegraph and Morse code made significant improvements in communication, and the steel-tipped plow and the mechanical reaper made significant improvements in agriculture. Many of the people in the North began working in the textile mills. Other industries also emerged, such as shoes, watches, guns, sewing machines, and farm machinery. Although the North made a move towards business and industry, working conditions were tough, with long hours, dangerous machinery, and extreme temperatures. To fight for the common worker, several labor unions developed, urging for a better working environment. New immigrants to the country often moved to the northern cities and were willing to work for less money in the mills and factories. Along with women and blacks, they faced prejudice and discrimination. A new political party developed to promote Native Americans over immigrants. This party was called the Know-Nothing Party. Things couldn't have been more different in the South. After the American Revolution, the South did not experience an industrial boom. Instead, it remained agriculture and nature, and its most important crop became cotton. The invention of the cotton gin in 1793 made the processing of cotton much easier, cheaper, and quicker. Cotton was also in high demand by northern textile mills. For these reasons, farmers used the new technology to grow more cotton, but to do this they needed more slave labor. Although nearly all who lived in the South favored slavery, wealthy plantation owners were those most likely to actually use slaves to grow cash crops such as cotton. Poor farmers who lived in the small farms and owned no slaves, called yeoman farmers, were more common. Also common were poor white farmers who rented land to farm without the help of slaves, called tenant farmers. Those who lived under slavery faced few comforts beyond their necessities. Poor treatment, poor living conditions, and hard manual labor were the norm. Slave codes were laws designed to restrict slaves and prevent rebellions. Some slaves risked their lives to escape to the North in Canada by following a series of safe houses where they hid during the day and moved from one to the next at night along the Underground Railroad. Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass were two well-known conductors. From 1816 to 1824, America had only one significant political party, the Republicans. In the election of 1824, four ran against one another for the presidency. Although Andrew Jackson won the majority of the popular vote, nobody won a majority of the electoral votes. As a result, the election was to be decided by the House of Representatives. Two of the candidates struck a deal to prevent Andrew Jackson from winning the presidency. The Speaker of the House, Henry Clay, agreed to sway the House to elect John Quincy Adams in exchange for making Clay the Secretary of State. The plan succeeded, and Adams became the sixth president. Although John Quincy Adams was officially elected, his presidency was stained from the scandal that won him the election and by accusations of corruption. Congress refused to support his plans for establishing a national university, space observatories, and to promote science. They only supported him in building new roads and canals because they were good for the economy. His presidency was relatively uneventful. In the election of 1828, the Republican Party was divided again. This time, the party broke apart. The Democratic Republicans, who favored a strong national government, supported John Quincy Adams for re-election. The National Republicans, who favored states' rights, supported Andrew Jackson. After a negative election full of slogans, rallies, and mudslinging, Jackson won by a landslide and became the seventh president. People nicknamed him Old Hickory, and he promised the average working man equal protection and equal benefits. Jackson was also famous for firing many government employees and hiring those loyal to him. This gave rise to the saying, "To the victor belong the spoils." One issue that remained important throughout Jackson's presidency was that over the tariff, or a tax on imported goods from Europe. The North supported this tax because it protected their businesses from competition, but the South opposed it since it meant more goods would cost more money. In response to the fears of a high tariff, John C. Calhoun of South Carolina pushed a law through the South Carolina legislature that said that any state could nullify any law passed by Congress that hurt the state. This law became known as the Nullification Act. Jackson's response to South Carolina was the passage of the Force Bill, allowing the president to use military force in order to enforce federal laws. Jackson also faced a nation looking to expand westward. The problem was that settlers wanted to move onto land occupied by natives. In 1830, Congress passed the Indian Removal Act, which allowed the military to forcibly remove natives from the land and transport them to reservations on the Great Plains. The Indian Territory was established in Oklahoma. Despite Chief Justice Marshall's opinion in Worcester versus Georgia, siding with the natives, Jackson refused to follow the court's decision and forced thousands of Cherokee to march along with General Winfield Scott along what became known as the Trail of Tears. Believing that Jackson's opposition to the National Bank would cost him re-election in 1832, Henry Clay and Daniel Webster had a plan. They caused the National Bank to apply for a new charter 4 years early. Jackson promptly vetoed it. To Clay and Webster's surprise, most people agreed with Jackson, winning him re-election and closing the bank that he despised for good. In 1836, Jackson's vice president, Democrat Martin Van Buren, ran for president and defeated three candidates running for the Whigs. Unfortunately, shortly after the election, the nation faced a severe economic depression. During the Panic of 1837, land values declined, banks and businesses failed, and people lost their jobs. Van Buren decided not to intervene and took a position of letting things be the way that they were, or laissez-faire. With the economic crisis, the election of 1840 went to the Whig William Henry Harrison, who was a War of 1812 veteran and was famous for defeating the native Tecumseh at the Battle of Tippecanoe. The campaign slogan became Tippecanoe and Tyler Too, since his vice president was John Tyler. On Inauguration Day, it was freezing out, and the 9th President, Harrison, gave his inaugural address without a hat or coat on. He caught pneumonia and died 32 days later. The 10th President, Whig John Tyler, took office after Harrison's death, but vetoed numerous bills introduced in Congress by his own Whig party. The result was that when it was time to elect the president again, his party did not nominate him for president. Instead, they supported Henry Clay. The Democrats supported James K. Polk, who became the 11th President of the United States. As America began to move westward, many traveled along the Oregon Trail headed for the Pacific Northwest. During the economic crisis of the 1830s and 1840s, many sought better lives in the West. Large groups traveled in covered wagons called prairie schooners along the 2,000-mile trail. In 1846, when Polk took office, he negotiated with England, and the border between Oregon and Canada was set at 49 degrees north latitude. At the same time, thousands of single frontiersmen moved to the West to live as mountain men. They mostly hunted and trapped animals for their furs. They faced severe conditions on a daily basis, and many married native women. Once a year, they met at a rendezvous to sell their goods to trading companies. In the early 1800s, Texas was occupied by Tejanos, Mexicans who lived in Texas. Spain had encouraged Americans to settle in the area, and when Mexico gained its independence, it too encouraged American settlement. Stephen Austin received permission to bring 300 families to Texas. By 1830, Americans outnumbered Mexicans in Texas, and Mexico banned further American settlement. Stephen Austin traveled to Mexico City to ask the new president, General Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna, to lift the ban and make Texas a separate Mexican state. He refused and imprisoned Austin after intercepting a private letter home, encouraging his friends to prepare to fight. In 1835, after several skirmishes with the Mexicans, the Texans gained control of San Antonio and a Spanish mission there called the Alamo. There, 180 Texans prepared to face off against thousands of Mexican soldiers. For 12 days, the defenders under William Travis held off the Mexicans, but on March 6, 1836, the Alamo finally fell. On April 21, 1836, the Texans defeated the Mexicans at San Jacinto, which is Houston, shouting, "Remember the Alamo." On May 14, 1836, Santa Anna surrendered and recognized the new Republic of Texas. After gaining its independence, Texan President Sam Houston asked the U.S. to annex Texas. Van Buren and Tyler avoided the issue, but Polk finally allowed the annexation in 1844. In 1845, Texas became a state. Thousands of new settlers fled to the New Mexico Territory, which included New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, Utah, and parts of Colorado and Wyoming. Many followed the Santa Fe Trail. When Mexico gained its independence in 1821, it built large ranchos, or ranches, in California. The rancheros, or ranchers, used native labor resembling slave labor. President Polk offered to buy New Mexico and California several times, but Mexico refused. Polk next ordered General Zachary Taylor to march his men along the disputed border between Texas and Mexico. On April 25, 1846, the Mexicans fired at Taylor's men, killing several. When Polk reported the killing of American soldiers on American soil, Congress declared war on Mexico. Polk had a three-part plan: take the Texan borderland, seize New Mexico and California, and take the Mexican capital. In early 1847, the U.S. took the borderland. On August 18, 1846, Santa Fe was surrendered without a shot. In June 1846, a small group of Americans captured Sonoma and San Francisco and declared an independent country, the Republic of California, which is sometimes called the Bear Flag Republic. By March 1847, when Winfield Scott arrived in Mexico City, all three were accomplished. Mexico surrendered with the signing of the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. It gave up Texas and set the border at the Rio Grande. Also, the Mexican cession resulted in Mexico giving up New Mexico and California for $15 million. And through the Gadsden Purchase, the U.S. paid $10 million for a strip of land along the Arizona and New Mexico border. In 1848, gold was discovered in California. Overnight, boomtowns sprung up. The prospectors were called 49ers. Very few were successful, but merchants made a lot of money off the prospectors. Without establishing police forces, vigilante justice was the norm. Around the same time, Brigham Young led a group of Mormons to Salt Lake City. They had fled from the East in Missouri after a mob killed their founder, Joseph Smith, in 1844. Because of their controversial religious beliefs, specifically polygamy, Utah did not become a state until 1896. The 1800s saw a rise in religious activity called the Second Great Awakening, and religious meetings or revivals were common. The temperance movement, which opposed alcohol, also took hold. Educational reformers like Horace Mann pushed for free public schools, and reformers like Dorothea Dix advocated for reforms for the mentally ill. One of the largest reform movements centered on the issue of slavery. Abolitionists were reformers who wanted to end slavery. Early reformers hoped to resettle slaves in Africa and the Caribbean, and 20,000 were actually transported to Liberia in Africa, which means place of freedom. White abolitionists, like William Lloyd Garrison, published anti-slavery newspapers and pamphlets. For example, he wrote The Liberator and called for the immediate freeing of slaves. The Grimke sisters and Harriet Beecher Stowe also called for an end to slavery. Uncle Tom's Cabin, written in 1858, brought the evils of slavery to thousands. At the same time, black abolitionists often participated in the Underground Railroad, bringing slaves to freedom. Frederick Douglass made moving speeches and wrote The North Star. Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman also worked to end slavery. Southerners were outraged at abolitionism because slavery was a way of life, and it supported the Southern economy. They also relied on theories of racism to explain that slaves were better off under white control. In 1848, the women's movement also gained momentum as women gathered at the Seneca Falls Convention. Issues addressed were equal laws, equal jobs, and an end to gender discrimination, and women's suffrage or voting rights. Important women in the movement included Loretta Mott, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Susan B. Anthony. Many also called for equal education marriage, and family laws. In 1848, the Whigs selected Zachary Taylor to run for president, and the Democrats selected Lewis Cass. However, both ignored the issue of slavery. Taylor won the election and became the 12th president. In 1845, Texas became a slave state. But the question remained, what would happen to land gained from Mexico? The Wilmot Proviso stated that any land gained from Mexico should ban slavery. On the other side, John C. Calhoun argued that the people should be allowed to choose and favored a policy known as self-determination. In 1849, California became a free state, but the South discussed secession. The nation was saved by Henry Clay, who came up with the Compromise of 1850. This allowed for California to be a free state, new territories could choose regarding slavery, and a ban was passed on the slave trade but not slavery in Washington, D.C. A stronger Fugitive Slave Act was also passed. President Taylor opposed the Compromise of 1850, but his successor, Millard Fillmore, who became the 13th president, approved it. The Fugitive Slave Act required all citizens to help catch runaway slaves and send them back to their owners in the South. Many in the North refused to follow the law, which angered the South. In 1853, Democrat Franklin Pierce became the 14th president. Although he was from New Hampshire in the North, he supported the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850 as a means of keeping the nation together. Further, in 1854, another dispute over slavery occurred as Kansas and Nebraska applied for statehood. Under the Missouri Compromise, both Kansas and Nebraska were to become free states because they were above the 36 degrees 30 minutes north latitude. In 1854, Senator Stephen Douglas introduced the Kansas-Nebraska Act that repealed the Missouri Compromise and allowed people in the territories to decide on the issue of slavery. Congress and Pierce supported the act, and it became law. After the Kansas-Nebraska Act was made law, both pro-slavery and anti-slavery groups fled to Kansas, many just to vote. A pro-slavery government was elected, but those who opposed slavery refused to recognize it. They began fighting and elected their own government. The violence became known as Bleeding Kansas, and an abolitionist named John Brown killed 5 supporters of slavery in a skirmish. In 1854, the nation was divided over the issue of slavery. Republicans generally opposed slavery and supported John C. Fremont for president in 1856. The Democrats, who were generally in favor of slavery, supported James Buchanan. The North and the South were divided, but Buchanan won and became the 15th president. In the 1830s, a slave named Dred Scott lived with his owner in a slave state. Over a number of years, they moved to a free state and then back to a slave state again. Anti-slavery lawyers sued on his behalf, and the case made it all the way to the Supreme Court. In one of the worst decisions in Supreme Court history, Chief Justice Robert Taney ruled that Dred Scott was property and could not sue. He also said that the Constitution protected slavery and that no man's property could be taken without due process of the law under the Fifth Amendment. In the 1858 Illinois Senate race, a relatively unknown lawyer named Abraham Lincoln faced off against a political veteran named Stephen A. Douglas. The debates over slavery captivated the nation. It was also a foreshadowing of the presidential race of 1860, where the two would face off against one another yet again. Lincoln lost the election for Senate. On October 16, 1859, John Brown and his sons raided the federal arsenal at Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, to steal guns. His plan was to arm slaves and organize a slave revolt. He was arrested, tried, and sentenced to death for his actions. He was seen as a martyr by abolitionists because he died in the name of freedom. To Southerners, he was a crazy man. The presidential election of 1860 was between Republican Abraham Lincoln, Northern Democrat Stephen A. Douglas, Southern Democrat John C. Breckinridge, and the Constitutional Union Party candidate John Bell. Lincoln won the election without receiving a majority of the electoral votes and without winning a single Southern state. In fact, he was not even on the ballot in much of the South. After the election, South Carolina believed that it was powerless in the Union and that slavery would soon be banned. On December 20, 1860, it seceded from the Union. In 1861, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina all left the Union to join the Confederate States of America, Jefferson Davis became the president. In his inaugural address, Lincoln was firm against the South and vowed to enforce the laws of the United States there, but he also pleaded with the South to reconsider. The day after Lincoln took office, he received word from his commander at Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor that it was out of supplies and he would have to abandon his post if he was not resupplied. Lincoln informed the governor of South Carolina that he planned to send supplies to that fort, but before he could do so, Jefferson Davis ordered the Confederates to attack the fort. On April 12, 1861, the Civil War had begun. Fort Sumter fell 2 days later, and Tennessee, Arkansas, North Carolina, and Virginia joined the Confederacy. Good luck on the test.